Hi, this is Scott. I really appreciate our sponsors because they make the show possible. Today's show is sponsored by Telerik. Create compelling app experiences across any screen with the Telerik platform. Telerik's end-to-end platform uniquely combines industry-leading UI tools with cloud services to simplify the entire app development cycle. Telerik offers everything .NET developers need to build quality apps faster. Try it free at telerik.com/platform. That's telerik.com/platform.
From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 473. In this episode, Scott talks with Dr. Matthew Tesh about developing StaffPad, a new class of music notation application.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am chatting today with Dr. Matthew Tesh from Carnegie Mellon. He is the co-author of a really great new Windows app called StaffPad that you may have heard about. Thanks for chatting with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This has got some pretty amazing PR. I don't know who made it go kind of viral, but this is a really great app, and it's kind of marketed towards being a Surface exclusive, although if I understand correctly, it does work on any Windows 8 machine.
It'll work on anything with pen and touch, really active pen support. So that's why the Surface is so perfect. It's one of the few devices out there that really brings that naturally.
Mm-hmm. And what does StaffPad do that just blows minds?
Well, the idea behind StaffPad is it's a way to compose naturally. And so it's, if you think of handwriting recognition, it's that for music now. So you'll be able to just handwrite notes into a bar. And as you move on to the bar, it'll recognize those and then you can play them back, edit it. So it's got a lot of the features of much more expensive notation programs at a fraction of the price.
So this isn't an unknown like space. There are handwriting to music apps existing today.
So there's been a handful of people that have tried something with the handwriting to music approach out there. So yeah, there's a few in the space. It doesn't look like anyone's kind of done it with the same interface focus that we have, and a lot haven't done it with that ability to that. A lot when they've done it, they haven't used the pen. So it's been kind of an iPad where you can press your finger and draw on it, but it hasn't really given you that full capability of pen and touch at the same time.
That's interesting. You know, I have both an iPad and a Surface, and I have found that, and this is just, you know, I'm just speaking as me, it's my opinion, but it seems like a lot of iPad apps are application light. You know what I mean? There's Word, and then there's Word Lite, and there's GarageBand, and then GarageBand Lite. And no one ever says light, but it's always implied that if it's on a tablet, it's not really full-featured. And I think that most tablets, not just iPad, but also the Windows Store, kind of has that implication that it's not a real app. It's a 99-cent app.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we really actually faced a little bit of difficulty when we were going into the Windows Store marketplace. When we decided to develop this as an app rather than a full desktop application, it was kind of taking a leap of faith that mm-hmm. it wasn't just going to look like a 99-cent problem or program. And luckily, I think we've hit that very well. But that was definitely a worry during the development cycle.
That someone would look at this and go, "Why isn't this $1.99?"
Exactly.
And it's not. It's in my store at least. It's $69, which is, you know, very competitively priced compared to other handwriting application apps.
Yeah, so I guess it's very competitive priced, especially compared to full notation apps, which is where we really think it fits in. Mm-hmm. There's a program called Sibelius and a program called Finale out there, and these are multi-$100 applications that'll let you really kind of play back and add all this notation and be able to do very, very detailed and tweaking things. But we've noticed that when people use them, a lot of what they ended up doing is dragging menus, clicking on notes, learning these special ways to enter notes into the music. And it's not just like writing music naturally. And so that was one of the big focuses when we developed this app, was to be able to really just write music naturally right into the, like writing on a sheet of paper, basically.
Interesting. That kind of makes me, I'm trying to draw parallels in my mind to things that I know better, because I admit that I don't know much about music, but I think about creation apps for like creating art, you know, Photoshop with a pen or Illustrator with a pen versus, you know, editing apps after the fact, Photoshop on the editing side or Lightroom. Do some applications in the music space try to straddle the editing of sheet music versus the kind of creation of sheet music?
Yeah, I think it's a largely unexplored space. And I admit I'm coming at this from the developer point of view rather than necessarily the musician point of view. So my experience with those notation apps, I am a musician as well, but it's not as advanced as certainly some people out there. But I definitely, when I use those programs, I see it much more as an editing tool rather than really a composition tool. I feel I can't really be thinking naturally when I'm trying to use one of those.
Mm-hmm. And do people who sit down and write music from hand like this, they understand this music like someone who has a sketch pad, it's almost like paper for the iPad for music.
Exactly. Yeah.
This
it feels really natural to them.
And people who are composers, like your partner in, your partner in crime here, the composer, David William Hearn, I imagine him sitting with his Surface, like out in a park somewhere, maybe some headphones on. He hears music in his head and he needs to get it out onto paper as quickly as possible in an accurate way.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the ability. You can't really, I mean, there's people that have been able to compose by maybe playing something on an instrument and kind of feeding that into a music composition program. But usually they're doing this like in a studio. And so that's where some of these more powerful tools actually have been really, really used to compose things, is when you're hooking up a live instrument to it. But you can't just walk out into the middle of the park and, you know, set up your iPad and, or set up your Mac and a MIDI keyboard and all this stuff and just start playing. It's here with this, you could really just take it into the middle of the field and start writing music.
Okay. So let's dig into a little bit of like, how did you make this? Is it written in C#? Is it written in JavaScript?
Yeah. So it's actually all written in C#. And this was, I admit, my first journey into really C# heavy applications.
Really? Wow. That's impressive, because a lot of people have commented on how polished StaffPad is.
Yeah, so this was a learning project. It's been a couple of years, so it's not like something I figured out overnight, but I learned a lot about XAML, a lot about C# in the last couple of years with this.
Mm-hmm. Were there any like limitations where you just slammed up against something that's like, oh, we cannot do that because foo?
Oh, yeah, limitations. So I'm not really sure. There aren't any big ones that stick in my mind. I remember, this has been back a couple of years, but when I first started looking into the documentation of the Windows Store APIs versus the full APIs that you could write on Windows Desktop, there were some limitations there. And so occasionally I'd find a reference to a function that I really, really wanted to use, but couldn't. Mm-hmm. But it seems like over the years, those limitations have gotten less, and I've been able to work around most of the ones that I've still encountered. I wish I could think of an example off the top of my head.
No worries. If you think of one, you can definitely jump in.
Yeah.
So, it sounds like if one's not at top of mind, it wasn't nothing major that was like, oh, we're screwed and we're halfway done, but we can't finish because Windows Store apps can't do this.
Exactly. Yeah. There's nothing that ended up blocking the development of the app in the end.
Mm-hmm. What about from a perf perspective? Because when I use like drawing apps like paper on the iPad, there's always a complaint that the ink doesn't get laid down fast enough or that it's not responsive enough, you know, frames per second of the ink that you're capturing. Did you have any performance issues?
Yeah. So initially when we did everything with XAML, just like kind of raw ink strokes and raw drawing lines, we ended up with some performance and issues as you started to get more and more information out on the page. Mm-hmm. Those have been less as we moved all the rendering code to DirectX really underneath the cover. So we're using SharpDX there to speed up a lot of that. And
nice.
When you have really a large score with like 10 instruments and 100 bars, you'll need that. So you're not trying to re-render the entire canvas, and the virtualizing canvas will only get you so far. And we're able to do a little bit more advanced stuff there. And that's let the ink that we're laying down really actually just, you're just re-rendering a couple of XAML lines, and so it's turned out not to be a performance issue there. So we did run up against that, but I wouldn't necessarily say that was a Windows Store performance limitation versus a system limitation in general.
Mm-hmm. So are you using SharpDX on top of XAML, or have you replaced XAML with SharpDX?
We're using it on top of XAML. So we've got like a canvas that's the background for that scrolling middle part of the app. There's a kind of a couple menu bars at the top and a menu bar for the bottom if you've never opened the app. And then there's in the middle, there's a kind of where you actually are writing the music. There's a few staves of music and you can add notes on there. So that middle score area is the part that's actually, a SharpDX canvas, but it's on top of a XAML canvas element.
Very cool. And for people who aren't familiar, SharpDX is actually an open source project. It's a free project that is basically a managed DirectX API. So, and it's, you know, it happens to also work on the phone or work on store apps. So you're using some open source software in your application.
Yes, we are.
More than just SharpDX?
I believe SharpDX is it at this point. At one point, we were looking at different decoding options for the audio files. Mm-hmm. So I know we are playing both with OGG decoding and FFmpeg decoding. And honestly, this is part of where it's as the developer, this was not my area, which it was just kind of fun to say. So it's been great having David as a partner because he's actually been able to help with some of the coding, that he's really familiar with. So he's been able to help a little bit getting the sound fonts up, a lot of the playback stuff. And then we've hired a couple of contractors for kind of small niche areas like playing back of the music and getting that really, really high performance. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I know that's something that a lot of time was put into how do you get these really, I mean, we've recorded full like instruments playing back at different pitches and different volumes and we're cross fading in real time. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of really neat stuff going on under the covers, even with the playback.
Did you just use the term sound font?
I did. I hope I used it correctly.
No, that's
too.
Interesting because sound fonts are a 25-year-old plus concept. Can you talk about sound fonts?
I actually don't know a whole lot about sound fonts. So I know them from the 10,000 foot perspective, which is basically it's if you have an instrument, that you want to play back the sound of, then the sound font is like basically if you have a font for a computer, it's how you write the letter A or write the letter B. Mm-hmm. Well, for a sound font for an instrument, it's how you play the note A or play the note B.
Yeah. Sound fonts were big, in the mid 90s, late 90s, when Sound Font 2.0 came out. And when people had the Sound Blaster, sound card, 94, 95, 96, there was a thing called the AW32. And it was like the first sound card that had sound fonts. And then suddenly this kind of cheesy, synthetic MIDI sound suddenly developed richness. And, you know, video games got an almost orchestral sound to them.
Yeah. And so that's definitely kind of continued to get better and better. And so it doesn't sound like that cheesy MIDI playback, when we come out. And we're doing a few things on top of that as well. It's not just kind of raw sound font playing back, but really as you get louder and crescendo, it's mixing volumes or instruments that were recorded at softer and louder volumes. So you're not getting just kind of one stretched, example.
Really? So you actually did some custom recording and have some custom sounds inside to make it sound the way you wanted it to sound?
Yeah. So there's some that we've licensed from other providers out there that have some of these really high quality libraries. And then we've also recorded a few instruments ourselves. And so we've been able to use the in-app purchase feature of Microsoft, of the App Store, to give us the ability to download some extra sounds, and as we develop more, we can keep adding them to the store.
Oh, okay. So what do I get out of the box, and then what can I add later?
Out of the box, you pretty much get a full symphony. So you've got violins, violas, kind of a full string section, full brass section, horns. I think there's about 10 to 20 drums, last I looked, of different orchestral drums. And then if you want to really buy things and add on some later, there's things like mandolin and electric guitars. That you can download from the in-app store.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're writing in StaffPad, and what are the sections? Is it a measure in between the vertical lines?
Yep. So you kind of write a measure at a time, and then as soon as you leave that measure, a lot of the code that's going on there, when you leave the measure, it turns that into actual written music.
Right. So you start writing, and the measure and the five lines turns red, mm-hmm. and then as soon as you move to the next measure, that red, it kind of pause. There's a moment of pause. Like it's almost like are you still writing? No, he's done. Okay. And then it immediately gets to recognize things. And then you have an annotation mode. So you can go and recognize your notes, but then you also can shorten the lengths of measures, and you can have stretches and arpeggios between things.
Yeah, so there's a lot of kind of editing capabilities, both in resizing bars, like you mentioned, adding more advanced notation that's not something you would really want to draw, or it'd be just faster to put in by hand, like tremolo markings. And then there's also, I'm not sure if you were learning this, but there's a sketch overlay layer where you can really write anything you want on top of the bars.
Oh, wow.
If you want to just make a note and say, hey, I want to rework this section later, or if you want to add a kind of a something that we don't quite support yet, some sort of little music detail on there.
And is this using a standard file format that I can move in between? Like I could work in StaffPad, then use my larger desktop and then move away?
Yeah. So there's a file format, a file interchange format for music notation called Music XML. And so we've implemented as all the features that we support on our program, we've kind of implemented the Music XML equivalent of them. And so that's the format we can export to that and interchange with programs like Finale or Sibelius.
And you feel like you're going up like head to head with those other, I wouldn't say bigger players, but the more established players.
So it's interesting. I feel like we're really fitting kind of in this niche between a couple different players, because there's a couple of the handwriting applications for music that are what we feel either is a difficult to use interface, or maybe the recognition isn't up to par. And so those are kind of your $10 to $20 apps that maybe are available on iPad where the interface really isn't quite good enough to be able to do this correctly. And then we have the applications like Finale and Sibelius, which are really kind of professional level engraving tools. And so we only support a subset of the features that a program like that would cost, but we're also, or a subset of the features that a program like that would have, but we're also about a tenth of the cost.
Oh, wow.
And so it's this ability for composers that are like in school to be able to have something that they can really work with. And we're increasingly getting more and more of the features that those programs have, and more of the editing capabilities that they have. And so I don't want to say we're direct competition for those. I see it more as a complementary system where you write something really quickly or naturally with StaffPad, and then you would then export it. And if you really wanted to tweak a layout or add, some esoteric, things on top of it, you could do that in one of these other applications.
And have you had updates or put out any updates since it came out with 1.0?
We have not yet. So we've been working hard on getting version 2.0 out, and we're actually uploading that to the store within the next couple days now.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Is there any particular feature that people would be really impressed with?
Yeah, there's a number of small things we're working on. There's been a lot of people that want to be able to do, for example, custom score ordering, so be able to rearrange the instruments. And so we've implemented that. We've implemented a more advanced time signatures. Now you can kind of set any arbitrary numbers for the time signatures. And there's a lot of small improvements we've made under the cover to recognition, to the print engine, the layout engine. So I think people will be impressed. We're kind of putting together a long list of all the changes that we've made. And we've tried to, there's been a lot of people that are giving us a lot of good feedback and seem to be really interested in the program. And so we're trying to address as much of their kind of first round of feedback that we can, and then work on the bigger things for the next step.
I want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, SyncFusion. SyncFusion's mobile, web, and desktop controls are trusted worldwide. But did you know that they also provide educational resources? The Succinctly series of free ebooks has great content on popular technologies in 100 completely ad-free pages. These books are written by industry experts, and topics range from Cassandra to Node.js to Windows 8.1. They are available for Kindle apps and in PDF format, and new ebooks are released each month, so browse their library at syncfusion.com to download your free ebook today. Getting back to the basics a little bit, because I'm fascinated by it, like the actual, is it called this? What is it called? The all of the lines, the staff.
A stave, yeah, staff, yeah.
What is that? Is that done in fonts? Is that entirely laid out by you? Is that written from scratch?
So there's a couple different pieces that go together. Some of that, like just the lines horizontally across, those are written. That's just like a drawing line primitive. So we're using SharpDX and saying draw this line. Right. Now for things like note heads and flags on the notes and clefs, that's something that there's kind of a different type of sound font that's out there. It's kind of a notation font, And so we're using one of those that'll actually give us the characters for the different kinds of notes that you'd want to put on, and then we can place
those. Is it a Unicode or an OpenType font?
Yeah, it's a Unicode TrueType font, and there's a special range of characters. So one of the problems historically in music notation applications that it's kind of been this really weird overmapped standard font that's kind of been extended. So maybe Q on the notepad stands for quarter note or quaver. And there's just, it kind of jumps around, and R is maybe a quarter rest, but then there's another note or another key entirely that means eighth rest. Mm-hmm. So there's not any real standard.
So you're saying that it's an uncomfortable mapping between 26 letters in English or Latin, the Latin keyboards and music, which is just simply not a spoken language.
Exactly. And so there's actually been a project that we've taken advantage of, an open source project out there, to try to remap this into a sensible way. And so that's, it's called SMUFL. I forget what that's actually stands for. It's a new music markup format. So it kind of defines, where this whole set of 36 or this range of characters in the Unicode set defines all the notes. And so it's kind of grouping things sensibly and making it a lot more easy to work with. It's a more sensible mapping.
So that's the standard music font layout. Something that Steinberg came up with.
Exactly.
Interesting. So then, you know, because fonts, musical notes and fonts, like that idea of like, hey, wait a second, fonts, we can do music. That happened in like 1984, 1985 when Adobe came out with Sonata. But the thing that's so interesting, I think, about music as it relates to fonts and languages is if you think about doing Latin type languages, that's easy. Each character is separate. But then you add ligatures and things that attach to other things, and then things get complicated.
Yeah, and so especially with the layout of the score, there's a lot that you can't just do with kind of fonts and ligatures. You can't put these two notes beside each other and trust them to be the same distance away. So it ends up you're positioning a lot of the core elements very carefully on the score, like the note heads, and then a lot of the things that are simple straight lines, like stems and beams. You're actually drawing those primitives yourself using SharpDX or using whatever graphics library you want. So you're kind of really combining positioning font symbols exactly along with a bunch of drawing primitives and having to line that up very carefully and as well space that out very carefully. So there's a lot of work that we put into kind of arranging the layout of the music on the page.
I see. So you might, you know, say, Unicode cone point EO2 is a bracket, but we need a really tall one and it has to be pixel perfect and has to be here.
Exactly. So we'll end up stretching that letter, for example.
Oh, wow. And that, is that expected? Is this the way that they expect one to use these glyphs?
Yes. Yeah, it was very, the program was very much, the font was very much designed for this.
Very cool. And it looks gorgeous. That is the thing. Because this is, in fact, a kind of font, and they did a nice mapping to the Unicode stuff. It looks great. It scales nice as well. I was a little bit surprised. I just assumed somehow that it would be only 100%, but it zooms very naturally. So you can zoom in, make a tiny little annotation, and then zoom right back out. And it looks perfect the whole time.
Yeah. And I have to give credit to the guys at Steinberg. They put together, we're using the Bravura font package, which is their implementation of their standard. And it's a great looking font. Yeah.
Yeah. And does this work on high res machines? Like I know that the Surface is very high res and the new Surface 3, not the Pro, has a much lower res. Does it look good at any size?
Yeah. We have found that it looks pretty good at any size. We actually got the chance to see it on a Surface Hub. And even at that
risk. The giant 100 inch?
Yeah, was it 184 or something like that? Yeah. And so it's amazing to see kind of the score just on this giant,
And did it just work?
And it just worked.
No. No weird high DPI things. It just looked great. It scaled.
Yeah. Everything scaled pretty well. A little nerve wracking to see that and actually see that everything kind of carried over. I guess it's a testament to a lot of the frameworks, the XAML and everything that we built off of it. But
well, that's also a really cool scenario. I hope you got video of that or you can put that on Instagram somewhere because I mean, imagine if a composer could sit there with their orchestra and a Surface Hub and work on a score as a team with this 100-inch giant television screen.
Yeah, I think that'd be a pretty neat experience. I imagine some composers might kind of see that like a backseat driver, but
True, true. Have you seen this being used already in an academic scenario? Like, this would be a great way to teach people how to read and write music.
Yeah, we've seen a couple kind of great responses on the being able to use this in academic setting or an educational setting for music classes. And so one of our favorites, that I think it was a group of middle schoolers, and their teacher used this to write some music on the whiteboard, or not the whiteboard screen, but kind of her projected surface screen. And then after that, she actually handed the computer around to the kids, and they each wrote a bar of music with it. In mm-hmm. the end, they kind of had this composition, and the teacher added in a little harmony and played back, and then pressed export and has an MP3 on the internet that the kids can go home and listen to.
That's fantastic. And how did you hook up with your partner, David William Hearn? Like, I understand that you had some page on Google Code. It seems like you guys may have each been thinking about how to write an app like this separately and then found each other somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. So I had an open source project that I tried to start, five, 6 years ago now. I'd done a lot of transcribing music by hand into kind of these more expensive notation apps, and it was just taking forever. And so mm-hmm. I was looking for a better way to do that and kind of stumbled across this idea. And he had independently stumbled across this idea. And I had this open source project that I just started and hadn't really had a whole lot of time to work out the details. And he saw that and kind of emailed me out of the blue, and took a little bit to decide we weren't, each person wasn't crazy. But a few years later, we've made a lot of progress on it.
So you've said a few years. It sounds like this is one of those examples of an app that's an overnight success that took several years to make.
Yeah. So it's been in production about 3 years now. We've kind of been in skunk mode for the last few years.
So you were literally like working on this in stealth mode, and you just dropped it in a nice, awesome, you know, kind of coordinated way. Like, no one knew this was happening.
Yeah. We managed to keep it pretty quiet over the last few years.
Was that just so stressful? I mean, I'm just trying to imagine, like, multiple years long to not talk about it.
I mean, there were times
sure
where we definitely
family
wanted
and
to
friends
release.
Knew about
exactly.
It,
so you could talk to it with family and friends, but there's definitely times where I wanted to be able to say a little more than we could.
Well, you can't exactly go, I suppose you didn't am I going to go look at your Stack Overflow and find I can see where he was having trouble with fonts right there. Laha, you know.
You might find a couple questions on the Microsoft board, and I'm trying to struggle with the blob upload service or various learning different things along the way. Yeah.
Uh-huh. I understand also that there's a little bit of C++ in this application. Is that right?
Yeah. So the C++ is mainly in the audio playback library.
Mm-hmm. What kind of stuff did you have to do? Like, what was it that was not easy to do or not from a performance perspective needed to be done in C++?
So I think just being able, and again, this is, I was on kind of every area except the audio playback. So I apologize if I'm a little ignorant on this.
I see. So we're into David's area now.
Yeah, this is David and a couple of the contractors we found to help us.
Mm-hmm. So the 99% is in C sharp rather, mm-hmm. and then C++ is where the sampler and the reverb and some of the more high performance stuff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And is there a backend service at all? Is there anything in Azure or something up in the cloud that supports it, or is it its own standalone thing?
So it's its own standalone program, but we are using Azure to actually, the user has an option when they have a musical bar that's not recognized properly. They can just go ahead and hit a button and report that and send it to us. So then we can kind of look through and see where people are having trouble with recognition. And so we're using Azure to host that.
Okay, that's cool. So you've got a little bit of bug reporting there. Do you have any kind of error reporting or a system like Raygun or something where if the app crashes, you get the stack dump mailed to you?
Unfortunately, no. That's something we definitely want to try to add in the next release.
Oh, yeah. Well, like just to take a quick second, but Raygun, they sponsored us a couple of weeks ago, but they are a really cool company, raygun.io. And basically it's a global error handler. And then it takes every crash that gets sent and automatically categorizes them. And then it'll even say, this error that you thought you fixed, it's recurring again. And here is what happened. It's pretty awesome stuff.
That sounds like that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be perfect. So you've got version 2 coming out. You're in the Windows Store. Why and when did you make the decision that it would be a Windows app and not on an iPad with a stylus?
Yes, we actually spent a good deal of the first probably the first year as we're getting a lot of the basic interface stuff and a lot of the basic recognition code, we spent a while targeting Java because we figured this would be a nice cross-platform, and then we'd have people plug in an external graphics tablet to use it.
Really?
And then the Surface came out, and we just found that you could, you know, draw right on the screen, and it made everything more intuitive. And so that was really the turning point, is we kind of took a leap of faith there, trying to do a creative app on a Windows device, which is certainly not really a standard thing that's done these days. There's a great Adobe Creative Suite and everything that works on Windows, but a lot of music apps really are more Macintosh.
Well, yeah, and I think also that people may have watched and said, oh, well, Microsoft must have paid them, or this was a lot of people thought it was a Microsoft app. But you came to those decisions on your own and kind of found your way onto the Surface.
Yeah, occasionally I'll see that in a blog and I'll kind of laugh it off. The person's like, I know they must have gotten paid from Microsoft. And I wish we could say that Microsoft sent us a lot of money. But
did they actually know that you were doing this? Like, when did Microsoft figure out that this existed?
So the last few months before the release, we'd been talking to some people at Microsoft and letting them know what was going on. And I think this started kind of when we were asking some questions and having a few troubles along the way, understanding particulars of the store, particulars of a particular like PDF export, for example, that we're trying to get to work. Mm-hmm. And so it got us in contact with a few of the areas of Microsoft, and they've become aware. And actually, one of the reasons we released it when we did was to correspond with the Surface 3 release announcement. And so that timing actually worked out based on something we had been told a little bit by Microsoft.
Oh, I see. So when you started asking enough questions and they started to get like put it together, they were like, "Hey, you know, we got this thing coming out. You might want to line it up." That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was great for us, and I think it ended up helping them too. So,
and it works good on a Surface 3. Like it's a less powered machine. If I have a student or a relative who's a high school or college student who wants to do this, a Surface 3 plus StaffPad would be a good environment for them to compose music.
Yeah. So I've actually been able to test a little bit on a development Surface 3, and it seems to work pretty well on there. It's starts having a little bit of performance issues, you know, when you get to much larger scores. So if you're dealing with 7-10 instruments and you try to play back all of those playing fast notes at once, the sound library is really going to be digging up a lot. And so we're trying to work and see if we can even improve that performance.
I see. But presumably you could render it and then play it and then it would work.
Yeah, so we might be able to pre-process. We might be able to preload some of the information and work on that. It's kind of a trade-off on what makes sense.
What are the resources that StaffPad uses that it uses the most? Is it CPU bound or is it memory heavy? Like, it's doing work, and I'm not implying at all in any way that it's bloated. I'm saying that it does a lot of work. What kind of work does it do?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple different categories of the things that are probably most resource intensive. One is the playback, one is the graphics, and then one is the recognition. And so the playback is a mix of memory because we're loading in a lot of samples so we can access them very quickly. So it's kind of a mix of memory and CPU there. The rendering is really CPU heavy, and then the recognition is just kind of brief little bits of CPU heaviness. So we try to pre-compute some, but we just can't quite pre-compute everything before we have to move on to the next bar and it decides to recognize right then.
I see. So you can't, it's not like a rendering in the sense of wait 5 minutes and then I'll play this thing for 5 minutes. You render and play, and you kind of buffer and render and play and buffer and render and play so that you can start playing as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I suppose to the user, it just feels like they push play and it starts playing.
Exactly. And so we can preload a little bit of stuff, but really it's mostly preloading the samples in first.
Very cool. And this is all at staffpad.net. And really currently and only on the Windows Store.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's one of those things where there's not another device out there really that supports Pen and Touch. And I'm not a Windows evangelist at heart. So it's definitely not me again being paid by Microsoft or anything. It's amazing that it's this device out there that really kind of seamlessly blends those two together in a really useful way.
And you didn't have any perf issues with the pen. Like, the pen did and worked exactly as it's supposed to work. And you treat it as a pen. Like, you can tell the difference between when the pen is touching the screen and when your finger's touching the screen.
Exactly. And that's actually one of the big keys that is the reason we couldn't do it on something like an iPad.
Ah.
that the pins on the iPad really aren't, well, first of all, they don't have the performance that the Windows pins have, just flat mm-hmm. out.
So they're not pens, and then it can't really tell technically unless you have like something like the Paper. There's a company called Paper, and they have an actual custom Bluetooth pen called a Pencil, very yeah. creatively named. Those things are basically their own custom thing, but most styluses on an iPad are just little tiny fingers.
Exactly. They're just duplicating the fingers. And so then you can't be drawing and then instantly scrolling, like drawing with your pen and scrolling with your fingers. It just doesn't, can't tell those apart.
Yeah. Yeah. The demo video at staffpad.net is really crazy because the person is basically moving the pen, flips it over, uses the eraser, then uses their finger and basically has three different interaction models within seconds. And it's extremely natural and very different from doing something only with touch.
Exactly.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.